Welcome to Golau, where we shed some light on politics, policy and polling in Wales and the world. This episode is one of four, featuring presentations from the Wales Governance Centre's Brexit One Year On event, held in the Senedd on, when else, the 23rd of June 2017. In each one of the Centre's experts looks at a specific aspect of Brexit from a Welsh perspective. In this episode, Dr. Joe Hunt takes a look at how the UK and Welsh governments are legislating for Brexit.
I'm going to address some of the legal and constitutional aspects of where we are and where we've been for the last year. I'm going to start with that meme that Ed referred to. Here is Her Majesty with her EU flag hat, just before she nipped off to Ascot on Wednesday, introducing the Queen's speech and the legislative programme for the next 2 years. We'll hear in the next contribution from Rachel, who will be setting out something of that negotiating process that's going to be taking place in Brussels. But whilst that's all going on, internally, domestically, within the UK, we're going to have, a two-year legislative period now. We have a parliamentary, the next session period is going to last 2 years, to try and get through the legislative programme to prepare our legal system for post-Brexit, the post-Brexit world. So I'm going to address some of the consequences for Wales of the legal powers that Wales currently has, what changes we might see to those, some of the consequences for devolution, and also more generally for the UK and its constitutional order. So we're going to need to deal with the body of EU law that we have in place. It's been described what we're going to need to do over this legislative period now is essentially fix the car as it's going along. It's also the plane as it's flying along. We're going to need to put in place the changes that are going to ensure certainty, continuity, that there are not going to be any nasty surprises in legal terms. So we're going to address what currently we have derived from EU law. We've had 40-odd years of our own legal systems, the UK legal system, the last 20 years, the Welsh legal system, that there is fully integrated within those legal systems this body of EU law contained within the treaties itself, our two key treaties that sets out some key principles, those free movement principles that we've heard about, the internal market idea, free movement of goods, free movement of people, of services and capital. Also commitments to things like gender equality and environmental protection. And those core principles are then expanded on or filled out with more detail through enforceable secondary legislation. They are laws, regulations, directives that are made by the institutions of the European Union. And that body of law, supplemented by the interpretive case law of the Court of Justice, has significant impacts in our own legal order. And it's suggested that there are going to be around estimated about 20,000 pieces of law that are going to need some sort of form of reflection about what we're going to do with all of this. So that law is the secondary legislation, the directives, the regulations, the treaties themselves. They're made with the involvement of national representatives through government ministers, through national parliaments are increasingly involved, have a role in this process. And within that, the devolved nations also have a say. EU law takes effect within the UK legal order because of a piece of UK law, because of an Act of Parliament, the European Communities Act from 1972. And that is the route in for the main body of EU law. That's what gives it its source and its effect and tells our courts to recognise EU law. Some of those directives, some of those regulations will be brought in to our UK system by means of Acts of Parliament, but they are the absolute minority. The majority, the vast majority of legislation will come in through the gateway of the European Communities Act and will come in either automatically Some forms have automatic force, and this Act of Parliament tells us about this, have automatic force. Others will be made through secondary legislation. Our ministers will take the necessary acts without having to go through a full Act of Parliament to bring that law into our legal order. And that could happen both at a UK level, but also a devolved level in those areas that have been devolved. And the Act, the European Communities Act, also provides that this EU law, once it's in place, has a superior primacy effect over any conflicting national law, that UK subsequent UK legislation has effect subject to those provisions of EU law. Okay. Within the devolved administrations, what is the impact of EU law there? Well, we know that the devolved administrations are involved in giving effect to EU law, provisions of EU law, where it falls within devolved competence. So we can see where necessary, it's necessary to implement that law, such as environmental or agricultural regulations. They may be brought in sort of a specific Welsh version of that. And there was mention made about how there may be developing divergences, because EU law doesn't necessarily require everything to be the same. There is scope for divergence. So we know that the devolved administrations are involved in implementing that law, but it also creates constraints on what the devolveds can do. That EU law, the impacts of EU membership, ensure that when the devolveds are legislating, their legislation has to be within competence, but it also has to be compatible with EU law, with any EU law provisions. And if it's not compatible, then it's not law. And those provisions are set out in the Government of Wales Act. We also know that devolution doesn't affect the power of the Westminster Parliament to make laws for Wales, but it's also recognised, this will be important, we'll come back to this as we go on, it's recognised that the Parliament of the UK will not normally legislate for devolved matters without the consent of the Scottish Parliament or the Welsh Assembly. This is the Sewell Convention, we hear referred to. It has, for Wales, very recently gained statutory status, that it is now in the Wales Act legislation. Scotland had it a little before. What we do know is that, you know, what we learned in the past year, is that having it in statutory status doesn't create any legally binding effect for it. It's not something that can be enforced before courts. It's a constitutional principle, it has political force, but if we find Westminster legislating in devolved areas without their consent, yes, it's unconstitutional, but it's not something that can be blocked through the courts. Okay. So this is about the constitutional legal background that prepares us for what happens next. So we have 40 plus years of our legal orders being increasingly intertwined with particular sort of governance acts having been contracted out to Brussels. How are we going to pick apart the legal orders without creating inadvertent, problematic, potentially costly gaps? A couple of points to recognise. Until the UK formally leaves the EU, EU law will continue to apply in full within the UK. We don't yet know what we might then be committed to continue to respect post-Brexit. Because whatever deal we might reach, whether that is at the end of, we'll have a transitional period perhaps, or whether we'll get full agreement in place before the end of 2 years, and Rachel will speak something to the likelihood of that or not, but that will expect to contain some legally enforceable principles. Some will continue from what we already agreed to. We know from the EU side there is a commitment to part of our free trade deal, whatever free trade we might get, from the European side, they're saying within that we want to see a commitment to employment law rights, to environmental law rights, to various social rights, that they don't want to see a diminution of those rights. So we don't yet know what we might remain committed to. But we're needing to get things in place, not knowing what we're going to have as our agreement. What we do know is, by and large, some powers, our sovereignty, our legal sovereignty, will be returned to the UK for it to exercise outside the framework of the European Union. So that legal sovereignty will be returned. But what are we going to do with this? And how are we going to ready our legal orders? Well, on Wednesday, we had confirmation from the Queen in the Queen's speech, from the government, that there will be a Great Repeal Bill. Although we've dropped the term great, it is now just the Repeal Bill. So a repeal bill is going to be introduced and will create various changes to our existing set of laws. It's going to come into effect on the day that the UK leaves. So there's putting things, getting the ducks lined up in readiness for that moment of departure. The repeal bill itself will be supplemented by, we now know, I think 7 specific pieces of sectoral legislation were mentioned in the Queen's speech themselves. They're saying that what the repeal bill will do will roll forward a lot of what we've got, but some of these things are going to have to be dealt with separately, that we are going to have to see substantive changes in these areas. And so rather than a roll forward that we're going to see, that we'll have separate sectoral legislation. And the standout bits, immigration, that we'll need a new Immigration Act. How do we deal with free movement of EU citizens that will no longer have that commitment to respecting free movement, so free movement of citizens. Customs, how do we deal with customs, VAT, creating a new trade, a legal framework for trading. And then specifically significant for Wales and for devolution, fisheries and agriculture are identified as being in this first round of sectoral legislation. Because, of course, these areas are clearly devolved. But there is suggestion, a commitment to having UK-wide legal frameworks in those areas. So a general piece of legislation plus some sectoral legislation to prepare us for post-Brexit. If you can make that out, what does the repeal bill itself envisage? What are we going to be seeing? The repeal bill, we know, is something of a misnomer in that it's not going to repeal swathes of EU law. What it's going to repeal is that European Communities Act. That is the thing that is being repealed. And that the repeal of that act is going to remove the source of EU law in the UK legal order. Okay, so that's the repeal bit. It's also going to end the general supremacy of EU law and end the jurisdiction of the Court of Justice. And we know that that's creating certain concerns and problems going forward in terms of what sort of deal we might have for the free movement of people and the recognition of existing rights for those EU citizens from other member states that are resident here, that Theresa May's offer on the table so far is said to not go far enough because it's saying we're not going to recognise the Court of Justice as having any role in enforcing that. So, a repeal of the Communities Act and of the supremacy of EU law in the court. But what it's mainly going to do is convert existing EU law into domestic law so that that law is as much as possible in unchanged, recognising that some things aren't going to be converted. We had a white paper around this that came out a couple of months ago that identified that certain aspects of EU law aren't going to roll forward, such as the Charter of Fundamental Rights. There's also going to be a power for ministers to make such corrections to legislation as may be necessary to ensure that the law is operable going forward. And there's a lot of controversy that's been playing out, House of Lords Constitutional Committee, for example, looking at, is there an appropriate division of powers there in creating these new powers for ministers to make the necessary changes to the statute book? Because we need to get the right balance between efficiency, dealing with this huge body of EU-derived law that will need attention, but also that we need to have appropriate democratic oversight. So the suggestion is that we need to look to the right division of powers there. Some things for Parliament, a proper role for Parliament in oversight, but recognising that a lot of this is going to have to be done through delegated legislation, through secondary legislation, where there isn't the same role for democratic engagement. At a devolved level, what we haven't seen is any mention of, when we're repealing EU law, the EU law framework from the European Communities Act, we haven't seen any mention that we're going to repeal that statement about the constraints under which the devolved administrations operate. So currently, anything that conflicts with EU law is not law. There's no statement yet about that being taken away. If it is, then that would clearly suggest that there's a need for a legislative consent motion, because we're changing the scope of the powers of the devolveds. The Supreme Court, in the Miller judgment, said that the repeal of those constraints would alter and expand devolved competence. And so that's suggestive that we would need the political and constitutional approval of the devolveds. So, again, the three stages, the repeal, the convert, and the correct. So in terms of converting it, that EU law will be converted into domestic law. We don't yet know how much of it will be UK-wide, UK-wide frameworks, and how much of it might be at a devolved level. Will some of the things that we were expecting the devolveds to be able to do be overtaken by UK-wide actions? And then again, the power to correct. And there is recognition that that power to correct will be given to devolved ministers. So, just picking out a couple of the key issues around this process of converting the existing EU law and raising some of the controversial issues from a devolution perspective that we see in what's being proposed, what we've seen in a white paper around the Great Repeal Bill, and now what we've seen in the Queen's Speech and the accompanying notes around the Queen's Speech. And what the government, the UK government, is saying is that, essentially, when it comes to EU law, the devolved administrations simply implement decisions that are taken elsewhere. They are implementing common frameworks that are set by the EU. And it identifies areas of agriculture, environment, and transport. And that itself, that statement is problematic because it doesn't fully capture the range of autonomy, scope for differentiation that the devolveds have in these areas, and also their own role in contributing to setting those rules at an EU level. But what the government has said is that it will replicate those frameworks through UK legislation. And we now know that in this next sort of two-year legislative process, this legislative session, we will see a repeal bill, which is sort of a general horizontal bill, and specific sectoral legislation. We've already picked out fisheries, agriculture as key areas. What the government's statement said around the Queen's Speech is that this repeal bill will maintain the scope of devolved decision-making powers immediately after exit. So it's saying it will replicate what we currently have and it won't change that. However, these transitional arrangements will then set the scene for intensive discussions and consultations with the devolved administrations on where lasting common frameworks may be needed. So going forward, once we've got these frameworks in place, or continued these frameworks for agriculture, for fisheries, for trade, what needs to remain, what can be changed, what things might come back. So these current frameworks, from a UK government perspective, they are presented as providing stability and consistency, responding importantly, to the demands of a UK internal market, that we have minimal divergence in the law across the different parts of the UK because of the problems that that might cause, the additional costs that that might cause, the regulatory consequences of having too much divergence, difficulties that might cause the internal market. From a devolved position, though, of course, this has been seen as a power grab, that these are rightly devolved powers, that it's clear from the devolution legislation that these are devolved, and they shouldn't be going back to Westminster for Westminster to then determine where they go next, but that they should come back to Wales, to Scotland and Northern Ireland, so respecting the existing devolution legislation. So, why are there these concerns? So there's a constitutional point about respecting that devolution legislation. There's also, to pick up on some points that Ed had mentioned earlier, there is that increasing policy divergence we're already seeing across a range of policy areas. We know that Wales is pushing ahead and is a leader in the environmental field. Now, if these things are re-centralised, what sorts of limitations will there then be on Wales's powers to continue to advance particular policy concerns in those key areas? Because there's a suggestion, of course, that the Conservative government in Westminster may press ahead with a deregulatory agenda in relation to social and employment laws and environmental rights. Now, some of those are not devolved, some are partially devolved, and others, the argument is, environmental law is fully devolved. So there are questions that are arising about the scope that Wales has, should have, to maintain its commitment to standards that are currently underpinned by EU law guarantees. And looking to the future, we need to have an eye on the use that the UK government is making of this idea of the UK's internal market, because they might be using that as a means to justify sort of re-centralising. It's not to say that it's not a key issue. Of course, it's been underpinning EU activity for the past 40, 50 years, that idea of an internal market and bringing harmonising laws across the 28 member states. But what needs to be recognised is it doesn't demand uniformity. It doesn't demand that everything's the same. There are other ways of achieving that. And so it's getting the balance right between achieving free movement across the UK, but also recognising the scope for diversity and difference. So, just to wrap up, what mechanisms are there available now for the devolved administrations and for Wales to advance and protect its interests? One thing it might do is withhold that legislative consent, although we know that legally it's not going to be a block. Constitutionally, politically, constitutionally, it is still a powerful act. There's also, we'll wait to see how powerful it might be, there's also the suggestion of continuation bills, of the devolves moving in now and introducing their own legislation in those areas and sort of stealing the ground on the government, legislating in those areas. And then, if the UK legislates, we might see ultimately, one way or the other, these things ending up before a Supreme Court. The Scottish Government, we're perhaps seeing over the past year, there's not been a lot of common working, there's not been a lot of coming together, the different devolveds around these areas, because there is a lot of political distance between them. But perhaps we're seeing, you know, a reassessment of some of that and some more general sort of looking at those common areas to try and protect devolved powers and the current devolution settlement. Scottish Government is calling for full repatriation of powers plus further devolution in additional policy areas such as employment. And then, as Ed has alluded to already, and this is winding it up now, here in Wales, we've had the First Minister introduce an approach that sort of replicates the EU on a UK-wide scale. It recognises that we need structures to create a UK-wide internal market and to support that, but also as far as decision-making is concerned, that we should have something more like a council of ministers rather than the existing system that we've got, the Joint Ministerial Committee, which is the way that the different parts of the UK come together, that isn't a decision-making body, that is a discussion body. So that's where we are in legal and constitutional terms.
We'll be making a video of this presentation available on Cardiff University's YouTube channel if you would like to review the slideshow. Thanks for listening to Golai, a Cardiff University podcast. Subscribe in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts from to have the next episode download automatically.